This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Has a place. It is hard. There's a space. And the world can't erase this fantasy.
Maryville.edu sponsors our phone lines. If you get a chance, head on out to Maryville. Take a look at that lovely campus, town and country. Lonnie Folks, the athletic director. Mark Stricker, the outstanding basketball coach. Pat Evers, the baseball coach. Boy, their soccer programs were outstanding. Maryville University, proud sponsor of this program.
Latest power rankings at ESPN. Where do you think the Cardinals fall?
14th? 13th?
I was thinking that in that 12-13 range. 10th overall, according to the MLB pundits at ESPN.
They're a top 10 team, huh?
The Cardinals are the 10th. Best team in baseball.
Mark DeRosa had his top 10 out today on the MLB Network. He did not have the Cardinals in the top 10.
They don't feel like a top 10 team. Even Saturday's game, the 4-1 win, or 4-2 was the final, two of the runs were on the bunt play where they just chucked it into the outfield. Remember, Hudson got a bunt down, and the Angels pitcher threw it into left field, so two of your four runs were on that play. But nonetheless, 10th, he does not. ESPN does not have Milwaukee in the top 10. Dodgers on top. How about the Dodgers being 29 games over? The Rockies are in second place. They're 13 games back right now.
Wow.
Can you imagine if there wasn't a wild card? They're 13 back, and the Rockies are the ninth best team, according to the power rankings. Dodgers, Yankees, Twins, Astros, and then number five, the Atlanta Braves, who nobody ever talks about, and they were a playoff team last year. And nobody's been talking about them this year. Atlanta, Tampa Bay, Red Sox, Cubs, Rockies, Cards. How about Atlanta? Fifth. And the Phillies, who spent all that money, not in the top 10.
I think one reason for optimism about the Cardinals is I don't know about this offense, if it'll ever really click. But I do think this pitching staff is kind of intriguing. It's like Dakota Hudson in these 8 straight quality starts. Jack Flaherty has really, really pitched well. He just has these, you know, isolated home run moments. And then Michaelis, who really didn't have good stuff last night, still goes 5-1. And I'm very comfortable with Adam Wainwright being a fourth or fifth starter. And what if Waka has found it? And that's all of a sudden not a bad pitching staff.
Well, his start on Friday, I think a lot of us were thinking, if it goes poorly, then you got a decision to make because you had already tried the bullpen thing briefly and then brought him back there. He had an ERA of 6 going into that Friday start. So you got to roll him back out there now and hope that he is on some sort of, I don't know, that he's found it again, if that's the right phrase, or if he's 100% healthy. But, yeah, he certainly gave you reason after Friday to think, you're afraid to think it too much, but that maybe he can get on a little bit of a roll. If not, I'm not sure where you're turning. Charlie was proposing John Gant. We've talked about Carlos. Has Schilt said that Carlos is kind of a bullpen piece? And Mo kind of indicates he could be a star. I'm not sure that they have a real blueprint, and it may involve Carlos and his health and his durability. Doesn't it feel confusing, like, where they see him fitting?
It does, but I think Mo thinks that because they're paying him a lot of money, and that's too much money to pay a middle reliever. But I think they know in their hearts that Carlos Martinez is probably not a starter anymore, at least this season. But I don't think they want to go public with that because that's all he wants to do. I mean, you want to give the guy, you know, like a little bit of hope. But if you come out and say, look, Carlos Martinez is a middle reliever from here on out, that doesn't do anything for his psyche.
Well, and I wonder why he can't be a starter. Is just durability just not an option right now?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he just can't get to that point. So they know that, but they don't want to announce it, I guess.
Yeah.
And so if not Carlos, if not Reyes, and you mentioned earlier he left injured again, pectoral issue, pitching down in Memphis. So then where do you turn?
Well,
and I know
Ponce
de Leon, who, again, does nothing but give you good starts, gives you winnable outings.
He's got to be one of the few guys with a 1.20 ERA, I think, is it after 3 starts, and can't get back in the rotation.
I think he's got 15 innings as a starter, 3 starts, 15 innings, and 2 earned runs. And you're right, immediately gets shipped out, although they did say it was sort of a move they needed to make for bodies because he wasn't going to pitch over the weekend. I think Michael Gersh even said on Friday, you'll see him back at some point, which I would think. It makes sense.
The other really encouraging item, and they're going to need him too with you know, Jordan Hicks having issues is Andrew Miller kind of like figuring this thing out. Now, granted, he's not the nasty, nasty Andrew Miller that we saw in Cleveland for years, but this guy is starting to figure it out right now, and that's scary.
Well, and they need the bullpen, which has been a strength. You're seeing now, I think Brebbia is starting to leak a little bit, maybe not as unhittable as he was. Gant had a bad outing last night, but on the whole, you trust John Gant. But I think during the course of the season, you're going to need different guys to kind of be injected into that bullpen to play a role. And if a guy like Miller can become more reliable, he did give up, I think it was Thursday night, gave up the lefty home run, which is even more brutal when he's kind of the lefty-lefty specialist. But yeah, if he can get, there's a lot of pieces there that can do more than they're doing now. And you're only two back. That's the promising thing. And it's not a fair review, but when you're in that clubhouse, you just kind of look around and just, it doesn't, and it's not a chemistry thing. They all like each other. They all like Schilt. I'm just not sure that this, if it's a championship caliber club, it just doesn't feel that way. Now, maybe they win nine in a row and you kind of change your opinion. Well, and maybe Goldschmidt goes on some kind of tear.
Yeah,
that's the big thing hanging out there.
You're not a championship team if Matt Carpenter's hitting .218 and Paul Goldschmidt is hitting .256. And then you're not a championship team if those guys are performing way below their expectations. And that's the bottom line.
Right. And that's a couple of big bats early in your lineup that are not producing that if they get going. I mean, my bet would be Carpenter will have a hot stretch, but Goldschmidt will have a more consistent stretch at some point here. He'll heat up, but I think overall when he gets going, it's going to be a 2-3 month thing, whereas Carpenter might be a 1 month thing.
As we wake up this morning, Colton Wong has two more RBIs than Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, who would have thunk that on June 24th?
Right. The stunner the other night when he hit the walk-off, which saved him an embarrassing loss to the Marlins, you were able to split with the Marlins. But when he hit that walk-off homer, it was RBI number 30. And you're like, wow, it's mid to late June, and he's sitting on 30. Now, if you're betting milkshakes that we're not going to pay Plowsy anyway, you would bet that he's going to get going.
Exactly.
I mean, he's six straight All-Star games. That's going to end this year. There's a really strong resume there. There's no doubt that he's going about it the right way. The guy works his tail off. You can tell he's a 100% pro. I'm not worried about his approach at all. And I would assume, based on his resume, that he's going to get on a roll.
How about, too, when that All-Star voting has been released, that there's not a Cardinal in the top three? I mean, if Jordan Hicks is hurt and John Gant's ERA continues to rise,
is it Ozuna?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's probably Ozuna, a guy you're not going to bring back next year. He's your one All-Star.
Yeah,
there's no obvious All-Star. That's the bad thing. And the voting reflects that, and we talked about it Friday, Derek Gould's story about it. He said maybe these are the best fans, and they're looking at it and saying none of these guys are deserving.
They don't. I mean, it's – Ozuna definitely deserves it, in my opinion. But you look at power outfielders, that there's so many in the league that I guess you'd understand if he doesn't. But his numbers are just insane. And the fact that it's his contract year, you wonder if that's going to come into play for Mozeliak and DeWitt, avoiding giving him that, you know, 5-year, $100 million or whatever is in range. But at this point, how do you tell your fan base you're going to try for next year, you know, with 3/4 of your payroll already on your roster now, and not sign your best offensive asset? That's going to be hard when they cross that bridge, whether it be at the trade deadline or at the end of the year. That's going to be an interesting development.
Doesn't everybody have the same sense that there's like zero chance he's back? Like, it's almost understood.
I think the worst case scenario is probably exactly what they're going to do. And I guess I don't blame them, since, quote unquote, they're in the hunt for the second wild card. But I think the move is, if you're not going to re-sign him, and I'm sure they've made that decision one way or the other already at this point in time, I don't think his play is going to change that fact, then you got to consider trading him. Like I said, the second wild card is an issue to where you can tell your fan base, you know, you're only 3.5, 4.5 out. But to get a compensatory pick for a stud all-star, to me, just doesn't seem like enough. The Blues did it with Shattenkirk. You kind of got to make a decision if, you know, you're lingering on this playoff, you know, you're hinging on being a playoff team or not. I don't know if it's worth just keeping them, missing the playoffs, and then
getting. But there are teams that got the second wild card and made runs And I don't
Frank,
think,
you just felt it with some of those teams. This team, you just don't.
Well,
you,
we
you
don't know
don't
what it's going to be like when we get to that deadline, too. I mean, we're a long way away from July 31st.
I don't think they can justify it to their fans.
Yeah, they couldn't.
I don't think they can say we're selling, even though it makes it could make sense from a business standpoint if you know for sure. And he did change agents. It's not Boris anymore. It's the Molina agent. I don't know if that makes any difference at all. Even if you know he's not coming back or you don't want him back, you won't say that. I still don't think you can trade him because of the optics to your fans. I mean, imagine that this lineup has been bad. Take him out of there. How bad does that lineup
look? I agree,
look?
But it could be one of those scenarios where, yeah, the fan base is up in arm, but you could look back at that trade and go, look at who we got for this, or look at what our team is built around now after we traded him. It's all about making the right moves. The Cardinals haven't done that in the trading in a while, so we just look at if you trade somebody, you automatically lose that trade. You can get value there, but you have to understand that, you know, if you're not going to sign him, you really do need to consider moving him before you have no opportunity.
Yeah, you know what it's all about, too, in terms of making a lot of money as a player, is to get started early and get that clock ticking and get that major league money. You know, we always talk about the Tommy Pham thing, one of the better players in baseball, complete, and he has a $4 million contract for 2 years. Then we have somebody like Luke Voit, who's 17 home runs, 46 RBIs, and he's making $573,000. Those clocks got ticking late. They have no power. They have no negotiating. And you have guys like Dexter Fowler, and you have Paul Goldschmidt. And I'm telling you, the bottom line is get started early, you know? Get those years in, become a free agent, and get signed.
And who predicted Ozuna would probably have a big year in the walk year? I think everyone did.
Yeah.
Everyone said he's in his walk year. He's going to have huge numbers. And some of the stuff in left field is embarrassing at times, but I still don't think you can live without him. Granted, you don't know what the offseason would look like, what players would be available. They may be able to get a trade. But with what you know that the Cardinals have, do you want an outfield next year where Fowler, Bader, maybe Jose are your three? Tyler O'Neill's off the grid now, right? He was... I think he was sort of in the background saying, well, maybe he emerges as a power bat. You could lose Ozuna. I don't see a lot of great options if you tell me next year Ozuna's not on the team.
And I guess, yeah, you could use that $100 million or whatever you're going to pay Ozuna to make this team better. But you need a Marcell Ozuna bat in that lineup, and you're not going to be able to replicate that spending less money on a guy. I mean, you could throw a flyer at somebody who had an off year that had the potential, but... If you need power, I understand Colton Wong's in there for defense. Harrison Bader is in there for defense. You know, Yachty is, at this point in his career, is in there for a defensive-minded catcher. You eventually need to surround your team with some offensive bats. Now, you have DeJong, who is still streaky. Goldschmidt, who needs an actual leadoff hitter around him. Marcelo Zuna's the only one hitting consistently. This outfield would be the worst outfield in the league next year if he goes.
And DeJong was on an all-star pace early in the year.
He's still young and streaky.
And I thought Vance Leich's review of him the other day was really, he said, I can tell that he's smart. I can tell his approach that he's smart.
Yeah, he figured it out.
And he said, you can tell he made adjustments because last year, a little bit of sophomore slump. Vance Leich said, I can tell he's changed things, his approach, going into this year. That's another bat that's cooled off. Maybe there's a thing where they collectively all start hitting.
Yeah. Who would have thought that last night, the guy you didn't want to have come to the plate at the most important time would have been maybe your best player, and that's Paul DeJong. Since he's in this funk right now, I guess he was one for his last 20, you just didn't have a good feel that he was going to have a good at-bat.
And are they at the point to where I'm all about letting players kind of play through slumps. Are you at the point where you're stunting Harrison Bader's development as a player without – I mean, I think it's time to really think maybe a stint in the minors, maybe get – you know, maybe – put him on some quasi 10-day IL and get his bat right. Because at this point in time, I feel like his psyche, every at-bat, every fastball across the middle that he's swinging and missing at, every slider 2 feet off the plate that he's swinging and missing at, that got to get in his head a little bit, wouldn't you think? I mean...
Well, the alternative is you simply let him hit against lefties and he'll never develop.
True.
I'll tell you, the guy that could be the future and actually could replace Marcell Ozuna is Dylan Carlson. I mean, many people think he's a 20-20 guy, he's a five-tool guy, and just does everything. So he may be your starting left fielder next year.
All right, one-game playoff. It's the wild card.
Dakota Hudson.
It's Dakota Hudson, right?
It's a no-brainer.
And it has been for a while. But if you're going into the season, that's a good sign. That means he's pitched well enough. But I think you're looking at your $17 million starter, Michaelis. I mean, you're paying him almost to be relatively elite, and you wouldn't. Game two, let's say you're in the NLDS now. Game two, Flaherty. All right, game three.
John Gant. No, I wouldn't probably.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean,
version of Waka, what we saw this weekend, is pretty intriguing.
I think Wainwright's splits are at home, so if they're at home, he could get a three or a four. But it's kind of disturbing that you don't really want Michaelis in one of those three or four starts, even though you're paying him $68 million.
I always brought this up. Even if he replicated last year, what was he, 17, 18 wins?
18 and 4.
Even if he did that again this year, in the offseason, would he make $18 million a year for a five-year contract? I know that two full years of sample size, but I feel like the extension, I guess I get the timing, but I don't understand how much money they threw out and that goes along with that timing. It doesn't make sense. Usually when you get those done early, it's a team-friendly deal. This one didn't make sense from the get-go, and would he have gotten that sort of deal with a duplicate 18-win season? I just don't see it. Lance Lynn had trouble in the offseason free agency getting a long-term deal. Not trying to compare the two, but he has a longer track record of success than Michaelis did.
I guarantee you Lance Lynn looks at it and says, wait a minute, they gave that dude $68 million? And if I'm Albert Pujols, somewhere along the way, I'd say, they didn't want to pay me, but they gave Mike Leake $80 million? I mean, if I'm one of the guys who couldn't work it out or the numbers didn't fit, I'm looking at the players they did lock down and saying, whoa, wait a minute, Fowler got $80 million?
I mean, the Michaelis one blew me away. And he had a great year, don't get me wrong, but I just don't think he would have ever gotten that. Just because of his age and experience level in the major leagues, I mean, those are two huge flaws.
I think the Leake deal might be the worst. And now you forget about it because he's sitting in Seattle, but you're also paying for him to sit in Seattle.
Yeah. Hey, is this a sign of the times and how great women's sports are? You have this great Kirkwood restaurant here, the Brew House, and you have the game up, the women's game playing right now. It's a 1-1 game. And you have four women at the bar all drinking beer here at 11:45. Or two, one has iced tea. And they're just watching a game. That's when you know the women's sports has really evolved.
And Frank's thinking, what am I doing wrong? Yeah. I should be sitting at the brew house talking
to
the ladies.
I have to work 12 hours.
Having a cold. Anytime somebody's sitting outside at a patio having a cold beer.
Ticks me off.
Frank is like, that should be me. Now, I have to be honest. I had a relatively workless weekend, which was great.
Private box.
Sunday night.
Bill DeWitt.
Last night was at Circus Flora with all the kids. Nieces, nephews, all the kids running around. It was great. Right behind Powell Hall. You know, they have the big top back there, the circus going on. And you talk about, oh, I wish I was retired, sitting there having a cold beer. Well, there's a member of the Walenda family. I guess he's the dad.
Flying Walendas. The grandpa.
Yes, the Walendas are part of the High Wire Act at Circus Flora. So when you're leaving, and we're watching this, my brother-in-law is sitting next to me, and we said, how old is this guy? He's doing the routine on the High Wire where he pedals the bicycle, and then he's holding a younger girl over his head, pedaling the bicycle, all on this High Wire.
How old was he?
And we're leaving. He's in line because they all greet you on the way out. And I said, I got to ask, how old are you? He said, I'm 68.
Oh, my God.
Dear mother.
And I said, when did you start walking on the High Wire? He said, oh, not till I was like 6 or 7. But if you're a Walenda, that's the family business. And basically, I didn't know it till it was over. There was four of them. There was an older guy, younger guy, and two younger girls. And when it was over, they said, ladies and gentlemen, the Walendas. That's the family business. Anyway, they put on a great show. I think it's closing out next Sunday, Circus Flora. And, you know, the circus used to always be animals paraded around. There's a couple of, Frank likes the little dogs. There's a great routine they have.
I got a couple of shepherds. What are you talking about?
Little dogs jumping through the hoops. The dog display was really fun. But for the most part, it's people doing the tumbling, the high wire acts. And it was really well done. Circus Floor.
Our text of the day, Frank Dillon would fit in well here, hitting less than 250 now. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.